Welcome to Layered, the business of additive manufacturing, sponsored by Xerox. I'm Todd Grimm, a 31-year veteran in the additive manufacturing industry. The future of additive manufacturing is promising and exciting, yet many challenges lie ahead. Our goal is to be your source for reliable information backed by data and presented by the experts. We address some of the major issues manufacturers are facing with additive manufacturing solutions and how they are approaching adoption of AM technology in their own workflows and industries. Through conversations with industry experts, we will discuss the complexity of offerings, technology compatibility, and best practices in integration, among other topics. We're here to navigate with you these big questions as we talk about the business of additive manufacturing. In this episode, the industry focus is transportation, and more specifically, rail. And the conversation will put an emphasis on maintenance in the context of producing spares or replacements. My guest is Stephanie Brickvita, Managing Director of MGA, which I will ask her to describe. So Stephanie, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Todd, for having me, and I'm really looking forward to our talk.
This is about rail, or transportation in general, but rail and heavy on spare parts. But I don't think many people are going to understand or know what MGA is about and why it exists. So would you please take a few minutes to describe MGA, what you're trying to do, who you're serving, and the big question of why?
Yeah, so I have two jobs. First of all, I'm responsible for additive manufacturing within Deutsche Bahn. That's the German railway company. And when we started with additive manufacturing in that corporate 6 years ago, we were looking for an existing network and we didn't find an appropriate one. So we were looking for an opportunity to get into an exchange with other companies who already started with additive manufacturing and to talk about subjects and especially experiences they already had. And we didn't want to undergo the same learning curve and we wanted to shorten that. And that is that was the reason why we were looking for an exchange with other companies in a network or association setting. Yeah, so 5 years ago, we founded MGA, which stands for Mobility Goes Additive. And with 9 founding members, and meanwhile, we are 130, who cover the whole supply chain in additive manufacturing, like machining producers, material providers, as well as printing service bureaus, universities, consultancies, and of course, a couple of software companies. And we need a lot of users in the network too, and this is really interesting to bridge the gap between users and corporates and companies who provide different services in additive manufacturing.
DB is a founding member of MGA. Deutsche Bahn is a founding member. And it's been in existence for 5 years. So where Deutsche Bahn is now, what it's learned, what it's achieved, what it's doing in additive, does it intend to stay within the network? And more important, I'm guessing the answer is yes. But more importantly, why? You know, what information or resources do they still need out of MGA after 5 years?
First, I must explain that Deutsche Bahn is not a constructive company. So we are just a maintainer and operator of trains. And this is why we focused right from the beginning on the printing of spare parts. You know, so we didn't need so many prototypes where the technology comes from. So we focused on spare parts, and there we have to cover a huge range of challenges and use cases, from trains to infrastructure and also stations. So we decided not to buy industrial machines, but to rely on printing service bureaus. And for us, it's more important to match the use case with the perfect technology in additive manufacturing, as well as the provider who can offer us those parts and the needed quality. And when we started with additive manufacturing, the first parts we printed were like little plastic parts. It was, in fact, a hook hanger. And meanwhile, we've also covered a broad range of safety relevant parts, also printed from metal. And yeah, that was quite a journey.
Well, I didn't realize that it's supporting trains, infrastructure, and stations. So in the context of spares, I want to get to how significant is additive manufacturing, you know, in general, polymers and metals, but also specifically metals for DB and those like DB.
Yeah. So usually we buy trains and we get the spare parts from our suppliers for approximately 15 years. And after 15 years, those suppliers say, now we are out, please help yourself, put everything on stock you might need. And yeah, sometimes we are lucky, but sometimes we really have the problem that we need spare parts we can't get at the markets anymore. And so this is the moment when additive manufacturing comes in. With additive manufacturing, we are capable to enhance the life cycle of trains, of infrastructure, of everything which has to do with railways. And so that really helps us to provide spare parts and keep trains on running. Just to give you an example, some time ago we printed a wheel bearing cap. And that is a safety relevant part. It's quite a heavy one. And with that, we helped to prevent the standstill of locomotives. Yeah. Also, we printed other parts for high speed trains. And those high speed trains go with 350 kilometers per hour, which is very fast. And you would not imagine what might happen if something happens. So those are really safety relevant parts. And with that part, we prevented a standstill of a 30 million euro high-speed train for more than 9 months. And we reduced that time to 5 months. And that meant that we really saved 10,000s of euros. And then it's not really important anymore that additive manufacturing usually is not a very cheap technology. So in the metal sector, often you have to pay 10 times of the costs which originally occurred. Of course, this is still a hurdle for this technology, that the prices are still quite high and those have to come lower. But sometimes you really find great use cases, but it's not that you can find them everywhere and without any effort. Yeah? So this is one thing we have to think about in additive manufacturing.
All right. I've got so many questions off of that simple, concise statement. So first off, you said you reduced 9 months of downtime on this locomotive to 5 months. Now, people think of additive manufacturing, specifically metal additive manufacturing, as a way to, we're rocking and rolling tomorrow. Why 5 months? What all had to occur before the spare, the replacement part was available and put on the train?
You need a lot of certification. And this is one of the other hurdles we have to work on, because usually if you have safety relevant parts, and those are, to be honest, the parts which prevent the standstill of trains or infrastructure, then you have to think carefully about the certification process. And if we want to replace existing spare parts, we always have to fulfill the needs of this certification level. And those are very strict, which is good, of course, because we're talking about a people-related transport mode. And then we have to undergo and we have to prove that form, fit, and function of that part is the same like the previous part. And then we get the certification. But if we want to really accelerate with printing parts and to do much, much more than we do today. And just to give you an idea, in the last years, we printed more than 25,000 parts for rail, which means more than 300 different use cases from many, many different technologies and materials. If we want to accelerate the printing process and the number of parts, then we have to work on the certification processes. And I know that this technology is already 30 years old, but if you're talking about spare parts and the certification process, then you still have to solve a lot of questions. And you need a certification and standardization process, which we are working on in the network. And maybe this also makes clear where Deutsche Bahn brings in some subjects into the network. And in the network, we work on the hurdles, which still do exist in cooperation in a joint approach.
Okay. Is there any possibility, or have you, or is there any possibility to pull from what's being done in other industries regarding standards and certification, such as aerospace? Are there conversations going on between the rail side of MGA, and I believe you have at least a member or two that are in aerospace. Is there anything that can be pulled together and drawn together to expedite this development of processes and protocols and standards that we can now operate to, versus having to do it on our own every single time that we want to tackle a problem?
Yeah, of course. And this is exactly why we founded the network, and to learn from each other. But sometimes we really also have big differences. So concerning materials, for instance, we need in the railway sector a very high level of flame retardancy. And that is even higher than in the aviation sector, which is... Yeah.
Really?
So if you have landed a plane, it takes just 40 seconds to empty it. Yeah. And they have a standard of, 90 seconds. If you're in a train with hundreds of people, you might be in a tunnel. First, you have to drive out of the tunnel. Then you have to give your passengers the opportunity to get off the train. And that might take much, much longer time. So our standards are 12 minutes. Yeah. And if you compare that, then you know that we have to use different materials and we have to fulfill different standards. And this is just one example out of many. So of course, on a global level, we can learn from each other. And the overall logics are quite similar. But in the details, we have to figure out something specific for each and every sector.
Are all your members operating in that kind of level that Deutsche Bahn is, or do you have some that are 6 months old into the network and they're still going through the learning curve to get confidence on reliability, get confidence on putting parts in place for non-safety critical items to get to that point where we're willing to put a wheel bearing that's 3D printed on a high-speed locomotive?
So it makes a lot of sense to come together and to talk very frankly, and this is really the nice thing about that network, about the different use cases and experiences with certain materials and technologies. And the others are also printing, and they also have a very broad range of parts they would like to cover. But if you get an inspiration for what is already possible, of course, it's much easier. And if you go into a train operating company, you usually have to fight against a lot of prejudices. 3D printing is just something for printing Star Wars figurines or for toys in general. And there it really helps if you can point out that other companies are already working with that. And the good advantage is that the technology is so haptic. So you can just give your colleagues something printed into their hands.
Oh, absolutely. And isn't it fun to see somebody who may be resistant or doubtful on additive manufacturing to be presented with the tactile, haptic input, they're seeing it, and then get to talk to a competitor or colleague and see the light bulb go on? Isn't that a fun moment when you see the clouds part, the sun shines down on them, and they get it, and they become a convert? I just love that moment in time to watch it happen. Have you seen that?
Every day. So, and this is what really makes me so enthusiastic about the whole technology, because you can enlighten people, and we're just at the very, very beginning of that technology. So the potential is so huge. And Todd, you and me will have this feeling 1,000 times more in the upcoming years. And this is what it makes so much fun to work in additive manufacturing.
I do want to go all the way back to parts. So 25,000 parts, 300 use cases. In the 25,000 parts, by percentage basis, how many metal, how many polymer?
It's more or less 70% polymer and 30% metals. That is due to the fact that it's much easier to print polymer parts. It's cheaper, and so the whole post-processing is usually much easier. But in the next years, I'm absolutely sure that we will also see many, many more metal printed parts, because with those, we also can fight, at least in the railway sector, the standstill of trains and infrastructure. And I'm really happy to be in that, this whole sector.
Could you describe some of those bigger drivers or buckets, and specific to metal additive manufacturing, if you don't mind?
Yeah, of course. So we have a lot of holders and covers and things like that. We would say that's partial substitution. And in the metal sector, we have also covers for cables, for instance. So terminal boxes, we have wheel set bearing caps, we have bigger parts printed also in wire arc additive manufacturing. And usually those are often things which close something or which cover cables and so on. And if we have those parts and in the if we're talking about the percentages, 30% metal, 70% polymers, then in the metal sector, of course, we are focusing a lot on those parts which are really safety relevant, because those help us to prevent standstills of trains, which means that they are, from an economic point of view, also very, very attractive. But now we also want to enlarge that metal sector. Therefore, of course, the costs have to come down a bit. And this is something the industry also realized, which is good. And they're working on that. And I'm absolutely convinced as soon as the prices come down more, the number of printable parts will grow a lot. Until now, we know that 10% of all those parts used in the railway sector are printable, which we don't use at the moment, but we would like to focus on that. And this is not something just for the rail. It's also a number which we discuss with suppliers, big OEMs like Alstom, Siemens, and others. And they are absolutely convinced that 10% of all parts are already printable. And if you have in mind that just at Deutsche Bahn, the spare parts on stock are worth 600 million euros a year, and you can save 10% out of that if you go into a printing on demand logic, you can really save a lot of money, which is very, very attractive. And by the way, it's also very ecological if you don't have all those parts and you don't ever know whether you will use them or not. You can print on demand, and at the moment we're just talking about the obsolescence logic, end of life cycle, replacing parts. That already makes a lot of sense, but if you think that you could put additive manufacturing in the beginning of the production process, so in the design of new trains, for instance, you can save a lot of money, you don't have to put so many parts in stock, you have already, hopefully, 3D printable designs, which usually we don't have, of course, so usually we just have a also often broken part, which we have to re-engineer and then print it. But if you put this in the very beginning of the production process, that will really help to enhance the number of printed parts. And you can design for additive. So the freedom of design is much bigger than in the obsolescence part. You can save weight.
Of your members, you explicitly stated DB is not a manufacturer of rail of the rolling gear. Do you have any manufacturers of train cars as part of MGA?
Of course, we have Alstom, we have other suppliers, second, third tier suppliers.
Right. Yeah, which would take care of some of that lead time, the 5-month lead time for the example part that you described, because that certification qualification would have been done if they designed that bearing cap to be additively manufactured on the first vehicle they produced, now you'd be in a position of just saying, if we replicate that, or qualifying that you're replicating it, but you'd have a much faster response time in that one example. So you talked about DB went from polymer. I believe when we talked earlier that it was a desktop fused filament fabrication machines, and then into metals. What's the difference at high level between polymers and metals that holds back the use or prevents people from truly doing as much as they can? Is it simply how easy they are to use, how easy they are to take control of? Now, you did mention cost already, that easier on the post-processing side to get what you want. But what are the key economic factors? Well, no, I don't want to just be economic. What are the key factors that make metal additive manufacturing a little more challenging to implement?
Good question, Todd. So apart from cost, it's the certification process, and it's also the quality level. So until now, it's really hard in the additive manufacturing sector to get the same quality of printed parts from machine A as well as from machine B. For people who are not in the additive manufacturing sector, it's often hard to understand why we can have the same quality level of printed parts in the same type of machines, at least. And this is something I know that the machining producers are working on that, but they have to. Otherwise, we have to print many, many more parts than we actually need due to that they were not really produced in the planned way. And this is something, as soon as we can control the quality level in the printing process much better, also costs will come down and the reliability of those parts is much better. And that will improve the whole using of printed metal parts even more.
Excellent. Well, I don't know if I forced it, but you glossed over one of your hot topics, and that's sustainability. I want to come back to that. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate more on sustainability as a driver for the use of additive manufacturing, what the gains or benefits are, and how that applies? You know, you mentioned less in the scrap heap or the junkyards, and I think that was based on buying too many spare parts for something we really didn't need, and now we got to dispose of them. What other aspects of sustainability do you think resonate in the rail or even resonate with an MGA, and you think people need to respond to those aspects more?
So they are really focusing on the sustainability of materials, of the printing process, on energy consumption, everything you can think of. But usually the 3D printing sector is driven by SMEs, by small and mid-sized companies. And you really have to tell them what you're focusing on so that they have the chance also to focus in their producing process. And even if you talk to huge material providers, they just recently woke up, in my point of view. And we really have to talk about the whole life cycle of parts. We have to talk about the whole printing process and also the recycling of materials in the additive manufacturing sector to cover the cradle-to-cradle logic. And by now, we are quite far from that. By now, we are always focusing on the material aspect because you just need that material you would really need for the piece you want to have produced. And especially in the metal sector, you can reuse the powder, the material you haven't used for the part, which is already very sustainable. This goes a bit further. So also the energy consumption is important and many other aspects.
Energy consumption on producing the powders, printing the parts, yeah. You know, the whole chain.
Okay. Yeah, so all of those aspects are definitely crucial. The big effect of sustainability in additive manufacturing, of course, is in the high investment goods, because you can prolongate the life cycle. You don't have a natural dying of those projects because or investment goods, because you can't get the spare parts anymore. So this is the big advantage, especially in the metal sector. And so, for instance, in the rail sector, you can use railways in future much longer than you do today. You just have to redesign them. And then you can also use additive manufacturing to do the redesign, as I've already described. And that really helps a lot. You spoke about the scrap or the material you didn't use, which are on the stock, but also the life cycle in general can be prolongated.
You did mention materials. So in rail, in metal additive manufacturing, what materials are they most keen on that? Well, let's have two buckets. One is, what materials are they using today that are available that they're enjoying? And then what do they really want, or where do they want to see growth and progress in the material latitude that we offer in metal additive manufacturing?
So in rail, usually you would use stainless steel and you would use a lot of aluminium. But of course, this is very general. So at the moment, we are discussing the repairing of car bodies. And those car bodies are made either from steel or from aluminium. And if you're looking for a high-performance aluminium, which is very, very strong and covers the needs, that at the moment does not exist. And this is a typical example we have to work on. So to be comparable with the previous modes of production, and we're working on this in cooperation with university and some R&D institutes from Fraunhofer to cover also the need of repairing of car bodies. And this is what we already do in the aluminium sector. And the next thing we want to focus on is in steel.
Another area that I know you're very passionate about, which relates to staffing and employees and people. Tell us a little bit about your position on having or needing greater diversity in the additive manufacturing space.
Yeah, so at least in Europe, we are really suffering from a lack of people, of engineers who really love to work in STEM jobs. And usually what we often skip is the female part of the population. And I work in the railway sector for a very long time now, and the number of women is quite low. So the average is, I guess, 26%. If you take a look at the additive manufacturing sector, it's even worse. It's just 13%. So, of course, then you automatically skip half of the ideas of the population and a different perspective on products and processes and production in general. And this is why I initiated a women's conference, which is called Women in Additive Manufacturing. And we also have a great initiative in additive manufacturing in general, which is Women 3D Printing, founded by Nora Touré. And to encourage women to come into the additive manufacturing field. And maybe I'm the best or worst example for that, studied economics and working in an engineer's field. And it's a lot of fun. And we have to pull more women into the technology. I'm quite sure, because I talk to a lot of women, that with additive manufacturing, we have the chance to address women who are not in the engineering field at the moment, but maybe also in the engineering field. So I think this is really a technology other than CNC machining or others to attract people who have had no contact with production technologies in the at all before. So because it's so haptic, because it's such an innovation field, and to really have enthusiasts I've never experienced that in any other technology sector that much, like in the additive manufacturing. And this is one big advantage we should use to bring more perspectives into our sector.
If nothing changes, so the big challenges in additive that are holding us back, if nothing changes, what's the growth curve look like in rail for spare parts using additive manufacturing? Is it attractive? Is there still a lot to be conquered? And then I'm going to turn around and ask you what happens if we do reduce cost and get the certification done. But first off, everything status quo. What's the growth project growth curve look like for additive in rail for spare parts?
So if we don't improve anything, then I would say we will stick to the maybe 3 to 5% we are already working on now. Okay. If we are able to improve standards, certification processes, materials, technologies, the identification of great use cases, then I'm absolutely sure that within the next 10 to 15 years, we will be able to cover 50% of the print.
Oh, what?
Yeah. So, but therefore, we have to work on that jointly, and we have to be aware that there are still some hurdles. But of course, as soon as you can imagine to jump over that hurdle, why don't we do it?
I really appreciate that. And you said use cases and sparking imagination, what's possible. I see We Boost AM right behind you. That's not only a tagline for MGA, but that's an additional platform you have, as I understand it, to get those stories, those use cases in front of people to inspire them to have their own aha moments on how they could use additive. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So sometimes when companies start with additive manufacturing, they don't really have a clue where to start and what might be the right projects and use cases. So to give them a hand and an idea and to be creative, we offer this WeBoost AM platform where we put in brilliant examples from different sectors, not only rail. So, and sometimes we also have the experience that if you take a look into other sectors, that might be very inspiring to think about, wow, can we also use this for our purposes?
MGA offers a lot of benefit to its members. Is your membership closed and you've got all that you want? And if not, and I don't think it is it open to anyone or any organization worldwide, or is it a European effort only?
No, it's quite European purpose at the moment, but we already have members from Asia as well as the United States. We are very open because we want to push the technology no matter where and no matter with whom. And everyone who would really like to do the same is warmly invited to join.
And let me try this off the top of my head. I believe if they want more information, the website is mga-net.com. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I encourage all of our viewers to go there if you're interested in gaining some assistance through MGA. Stephanie, it's been my pleasure, and I'm sure our audience really appreciates the insights and experiences that you're offering to help them in their journeys. But all I can say is, or close out with, is a huge thank you for you taking the time out of your busy day to join us today. So thank you so much, Stephanie.
Thank you so much, Todd. It was really a great pleasure to talk to one of the experts of the whole additive manufacturing sector.
Well, you're so kind. Thank you so much. I did blush on that. So thank you. Have a good day and take care, everyone.